Good morning. This is Long Island Local News on 88.3 WLIW-FM, heard in Western Suffolk on 96.9 FM. I'm Michael Mackey. The New York State Department of Education yesterday released eagerly awaited guidance on the implementation of a ban on Native American mascots, team names, and logos in public schools. Robert Brodsky reports on Newsday.com that the 11-page document provides new details on the ban, which sparked confusion among some Long Island administrators and defiance among others. The measure could affect about a dozen Long Island school districts, laying bare in greater specificity the consequences for schools that choose not to follow the mandate. For example, any individual who feels their school district is not complying with the order can file an appeal to the State Education Commissioner to have a school officer removed. Districts that refuse to make the change could face the removal of school officers as well as the withholding of state aid, which the document released Thursday noted would be as a last resort. Districts that are unable to fully eliminate the Native American team names, mascots, and logos by the June 30, 2025 deadline can apply for an extension based on a showing of good cause. In those instances, the district will have to demonstrate that about 75% of the work had already been completed and the replacement costs could be substantially mitigated if briefly postponed. The ban was unanimously approved April 18th by the 17-member Board of Regents. It requires school districts statewide to remove Native American references on uniforms, etc., by next year. The names of schools themselves remain outside the scope of the regulation, per the guidance released on Thursday, which also states that plaques, trophies, and championship banners with prohibited team name or logo are considered historical artifacts that do not need to be replaced, according to the updated guidance. The guidance places the responsibility on boards of education to check whether their team names, mascots, or logos must be changed. New York City's population is continuing to flounder in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic, and most city dwellers have flocked to southern states, new data shows. Catherine Dunleavy in the New York Post reports that the U.S. Census Bureau revealed yesterday that the Big Apple's population is 5.3% lower than it was when the novel coronavirus first hit the country. Over 468,200 people fled New York City between April 2020 and July 2022. The entire Empire State said goodbye to approximately 431,145 people between 2020 and 2022, according to the data, and they're fleeing south. The town of Riverhead this week became the first Long Island municipality to declare a state of emergency regarding asylum seekers, blocking motels and other facilities from accepting New York City migrants, joining nearly a dozen counties statewide. Denise Civiletti reports on RiverheadLocal.com that Riverhead Town Supervisor Yvette Aguiar says all the other Suffolk Town Supervisors support her emergency declaration, but other Suffolk Supervisors say otherwise. In a press release Wednesday night, Aguiar circulated a statement issued by the Suffolk County Supervisors Association claiming it was a show of support for an order issued Tuesday declaring a state of emergency in the town of Riverhead. The association statement did not mention Aguiar's executive order or discuss the authority of any town supervisor to issue such an order. Suffolk County Supervisors Association chairperson Rich Schaefer said yesterday the association statement, quote, clearly did not indicate support for Aguiar's emergency order. Quote, I personally would not support that because I do not believe it's based in law, said Schaefer, who is Babylon Town Supervisor. Southold Town Supervisor Scott Russell agreed. The supervisors had no such discussion about weighing in on the emergency order, Russell said. I am certain town supervisors have no such authority to stop people from entering or leaving their towns, the Southold Town Supervisor said. No supervisor has such authority and frankly shouldn't, said Russell. Both Schaefer, a Democrat, and Russell, a Republican, said the Supervisor Association statement was addressing the federal situation. Residents criticized Supervisor Yvette Aguiar's declaration of a state of emergency in an attempt to block the lodging of asylum seekers in Riverhead Town as being without factual basis and having the potential to fuel fear and hate of immigrants. Alec Lewis reports on RiverheadLocal.com that residents, including members of the town's anti-bias task force, criticized the decision at the town board's meeting Wednesday night, a day after Aguiar's order was issued. Board members stood behind Aguiar's decision, defending it as a preemptive measure to thwart a potential crisis. "There's really no hard evidence to support the need for such a drastic action," said Angela DeVito of South Jamesport, the Democratic Party's candidate for Riverhead Town Supervisor. "I'd like to know from you as members of the town board, where is the verifiable information about this imminent threat to the town of Riverhead?" said Angela DeVito. "I'm not sure that there is verifiable information that says they are absolutely coming to Riverhead," Councilmember Tim Hubbard said in response to DeVito's question. "This move was a proactive move instead of waiting for it to happen and then standing there trying to figure it out. We have been proactive and we do not want this to happen in our town." Half of the top 10 beaches in the United States for 2023 are in Florida and Hawaii, but number 3 on the list is right here in Southampton, USA. That's according to the 2023 list of best U.S. beaches released this week by Dr. Beach, a.k.a. coastal scientist Stephen Leatherman. Southampton's Cooper's Beach is once again ranked among our country's top beaches at number 3. Florida's St. George Island State Park earns the top slot. Dr. Leatherman has been ranking America's best beaches since 1991. He uses 50 criteria to evaluate hundreds of public beaches in the U.S. The criteria include beach width, sand softness, water temperature, and color, wildlife, and more. South Fork Wind marked completion of the project's onshore export cable system this week after 15 months of work, trenching and laying cable down 4.1 miles of back roads and Long Island Railroad rights-of-way from Waynescott to a substation in East Hampton Village. Representatives for the wind farm say this portion of the work has been completed on schedule, putting South Fork Wind on track to meet its goal of being operational by the end of this year. Beth Young at East End Beacon reports that South Fork Wind is a 12-turbine, 130-megawatt offshore wind farm slated to be built 35 miles offshore from Montauk Point, which is estimated will provide enough electricity to power 70,000 New York homes. It would be the first and smallest of many offshore wind farms planned to bring electric power to New York State. After years of back and forth between East Hampton Town, the East Hampton Town trustees, residents of Waynescott and the wind farm, the town and South Fork Wind reached an agreement in 2021 that the wind farm would provide $28.9 million in host community agreement benefits to the town over the next 25 years in exchange for use of East Hampton Town roads and rights of way. That work is now complete. Quote, "The quality of the cable installation far exceeded the expectations of the town trustees," said Francis Bach, clerk for East Hampton Town Trustees. "We greatly appreciate the diligence of all involved." South Fork Wind is now working to install the project's 68 nautical mile submarine cable from its landfall below Waynescott Beach. This has been Long Island Local News on Long Island's only NPR station, WLIW-FM. I'm Michael Mackey.